We're talking about the UFOs and cover-ups and conspiracies and cold fusion and all sorts of things. Every single line is full. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can right after this. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George and Ori on Coast to Coast AM. Before the break, we were talking with Mike in San Francisco about these new documents that surfaced a number of days ago. Allegedly a letter written by JFK 9 days before his assassination, written to the CIA asking them for their files on UFOs. You would have to agree, Mike, that that was one heck of a conspiracy story, JFK, CIA, and UFOs all wrapped into one.
Yeah, as conspiracy stories go, it's got to be up close to the top.
Well, if you've read this stuff and you know, you mentioned Jim Mars, I know that he has looked at the whole JFK UFO connection as much as anyone. It goes back as far as Marilyn Monroe, you know, the
Yeah.
stories that Marilyn Monroe may have been murdered because she slept with JFK and over pillow talk, he told her something about aliens
Yeah.
and she was ready to spill the beans. You're familiar with that.
I am, and that the other story that I heard that caught my interest was that and apparently Khrushchev's son has confirmed that Jack Kennedy and Khrushchev wanted to do a joint venture into space, that where they were going to combine the efforts of both countries and bring along an end to the Cold War and foster peace and what have you with that venture, and that there were people I don't know in any administration or who knows in places of power that didn't like that idea. And he was going to share that information with Khrushchev.
Oh, well, I haven't heard that one.
It,
I,
it's,
I will,
yeah, it's around.
I will tell you that my reaction the first time when I read this stuff about the CIA memo over the last couple of days, I had a reaction in twofold. One is that, you know, there was a lot of people that wanted JFK dead, and I've read a lot of the books about him. A lot of people who wanted him dead for more specific reasons, the mob or Castro
Oh,
or
yeah, gambling in
maybe
Cuba and all, yeah.
Lyndon Johnson, a lot of folks
Yeah.
had reasons to want to get rid of him. I would think in general that UFOs would be far down the list. And then you look at this latest information, which supposedly was acquired by this guy. He's a history teacher in Georgia, I think. He writes, files a Freedom of Information request and gets back these incredible documents. I would have to wonder where those documents have been because, you know, thousands of people have filed FOIA requests over the years looking for similar stuff. And they've never popped up before, at least not that I know of. So why did they pop up now? Did they just find it in a box somewhere? I think that caution, whenever something is this good, that caution is a good idea, that you have to be skeptical initially, be careful about how much of the story you buy until you track it down. I'd love to see, for example, the letter that this guy wrote, which agency he sent it to that produced these documents. I'd like to see the return envelope and the canceled stamp and all that stuff. To suggest to us, to prove to us that it was actually a FOIA request. And then I'd like to see somebody duplicate the request, send a letter and a request to the same agency, and see if you get the same documentation back.
Yeah, a document expert actually, if the story's to be vetted properly, it's got to be done with history people and legal people should have a look at it and decide whether or not it's valid.
Mike, thank you for bringing up the point. I'll tell you what I'll do
Yeah.
is I have a guest set up for Sunday night. Maurice Cotterell is the guest for the last 3 hours of the show. If I will ask our producer to see if we can contact this guy, this history teacher, see if he'll come on and join us in the first hour and
Oh, that'd be
talk about
great.
this on Sunday night.
Yeah,
I'll
that'd
give
be
it a
great.
try.
Thank you,
Can't
George.
guarantee it. Thanks for the call. East of the Rockies, John in Newport, Rhode Island. Hi, John. I know you've been holding a long time. Thanks for your patience.
Well, that's okay. Regarding the cold fusion,
Sure.
American ingenuity being what it is, and that sounds pretty close to reality again. It's basically transmutation. I'm not going to freeze up here on you, but it's basically the fabled transmutation of elements, like
What?
the Philosopher's Stone, all of that.
Alchemy.
Alchemy, that's the word I'm looking for. So what do you think would happen to gold when every kid in the country starts producing it in their basement? It'll go the
Well,
way of the dollar bill that's happening right now.
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happens to currency backed by gold when gold itself is not very valuable. You'd have a whole new bunch of people that want to kill you if you're going to develop something, some technology that makes gold worthless.
Well, yeah, if you're using cold fusion and it's going to be tabletop, would be the first thought of people is to produce gold in their basement.
So you think that this technology, that it could be used for that?
Well, it's a similar principle. Cold fusion is you're making a new element out of another element, out of two other elements.
I didn't understand that. I understood the process of using the rare elements to produce power, but I didn't understand that.
Well, okay, sorry. You're like, if you're using fusion, that's what transmutation is of an element.
Right.
So that would be a lead-in to transmuting an element into gold.
I'll tell you what, John, we're stretching the outer boundaries of my understanding of physics and chemistry here. So.
Oh, I thought that was kind of straightforward. I don't know that much, but I thought it was similar to I'll bring your attention to The Secret Life of Plants.
Yes.
And I believe they mentioned a man named Kervan. And the chickens apparently take elements out of their feed and transmute that into calcium.
Oh. Well, I'll put it this way, is that I haven't read everything, obviously, about cold fusion, but I've read a little bit, and I have never seen anything mentioning about the possibility of creating gold out of it. I would think that would be pretty high on the list of things that you could do with it that would be mentioned in the popular press if that were something that could be accomplished. But I'll tell you what, I'll throw it out to the audience, anybody else who's on the phone line.
I wanted to put it out there for, because
okay.
I was wondering about that. It would be very easy to produce.
Okay, John in Newport, I'll put it out there. We'll see what they say. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Wildcard line, Ronald in Morgantown, West Virginia. Good morning, Ronald.
Hello, George. Great to be on with you.
Thank you.
You're a legend in journalism.
Well, that's a matter of opinion, but how can I help you?
Well, in line with your previous guest and cold fusion and the alternative energy topics, I'd like to share a little story with you. I'm the owner of a small energy company, and we make thermoelectric generators. That's a device that converts heat into electricity.
Right.
And we currently hold the number one position in Google for the search term thermoelectric generator. And having that position is great. However, it's caused some problems, some unwanted attention. And I frequently get contacted by different corporations and the government itself. To give you some examples, Northrop Grumman has been in contact with me twice, Lawrence Livermore, National Langley Research Center, and the Naval Research Laboratory, just to name a few. But they're interested in buying my product. They want to know more details about what I'm doing. They want the inside scoop of the technology. And what I'm doing isn't really, anything that fantastic. It's not rocket science, so to speak.
Is this something that you developed?
No. It's been around for, technology's been around for a long time. And it's in use by, many different people, including NASA themselves. But it's not super secret. It's not free energy. But they seem to think that I know something that I'm not sharing.
Or that you're heading in some direction that they don't want you to head.
Exactly. And one of my most interesting stories would be Northrop Grumman. They've actually contacted me twice over the last 2-3 years. And the first time, they wanted me to sign a contract with them. And the interesting thing about the contract, it was for a joint development on a project and for the Navy. And they wanted me, in the contract, as part of the contract, I could not tell anybody that I had a contract with them. I could not publicly disclose any relationship with Northrop. And they wanted to bring me down on my team to Chesapeake Bay, put us out on a ship to test this device. And as a friend of mine had said, this is pretty suspicious. They want you to sign a contract, but you can't publicly say that you have the contract.
And you're going to go out on a boat?
And then I'm going to go out on a boat with them in the middle of the day?
I'm not sure I'd take that trip. No, I don't think so. So that's really odd. Anything threatening anywhere in any of these contacts?
The last time Northrop contacted me which was August of last year, They wanted me to get on a conference call with them, with a bunch of other researchers, and basically talk about thermoelectric energy. And I sent him a reply that he didn't like, accused them of being insincere in their interest in me, and that they were basically just trying to pick my brain, find out what it is that I know, and I'm not interested.
I would think as a capitalist that you could tell them, look, you guys want my time, hire me. Hire me as a consultant or something like that. Did they ever try to, anybody ever come close to saying, we want to buy your company?
No. But the reply from the general from Northrop, in my last contact, he was polite but a little bit upset about my response and said that their interest was sincere. But he made a comment that, I don't know, I kind of took it as a veiled threat. I can't paraphrase him, but it was something to the effect that there'll come a time when, you know, I wish I had, you know, played ball with him, kind of stuff.
Well, Ronald, watch your back there. You get any trouble, call us up on Coast to Coast. Let us know what's happening. And it's so odd. If, as you say, the technology you're talking about is not revolutionary, it's not secret, why they would lean so heavily on you and be so heavy-handed.
Well, I think I might know. It's because of some sideline research that I'm doing with.
All right, now we're talking. Now we're talking.
With some bismuth telluride, which is the alloy that's used in thermoelectric generators. There's other alloys that can be used to generate electricity from heat, but that's the current one. And you might remember that Arts Park.
Yeah.
And there's a bismuth telluride alloy in that material.
Oh, I see. Well, the bismuth angle, that's a pretty interesting angle. You watch your back. Let us know if you have some trouble, and send me a note from time to time. I'd like to hear more about your work.
What, at your email?
Yeah. Email me right at the Coast to Coast. Thanks very much, Ronald. Appreciate the call. Thomas in Cabazon, California, Wildcard Line. Hi, Thomas.
Good evening, or good morning. How you doing?
Hi. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Yes, just around 12:30, before the 12:30 news hour, somebody brought up about Marfa, Texas.
Yes.
And I wanted to relate a story that's been in our family. Now, we're Apaches.
Yes.
Now, at about somewhere in and around, in the 80s, I was watching this program, Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack. And as I was watching it, it was about the mysterious life of Marfa. And I kind of remembered something that I'd heard when I was younger. So I called up my mom, and I asked her about the lights in Marfa. So she retold me the story. So here you go. When around 1885 up through maybe about 1890, 93, my great-grandfather was working at a ranch. And when he and a couple other fellow Indians, another few other natives, had left for the day, they were riding back on a buckboard. They were all going back up to their village in Marfa. That's where their village was at. And on their way, because it was already, you know, in the evening, sun was going, you know, it was getting evening time, sun was descending, and they saw the light. So they kept on going towards the light, figuring, you know, they were going to find something. So as they kept on getting closer, you know, the lights would just, they fade out. But they could tell by landmarks that were, you know, in that immediate area, you know, just to continue. So they went, and they approximated where the lights had disappeared at. And they had a couple of shovels on the buckboard. And they started to dig, thinking they would find treasure or something or some answer to these lights. So they dug and they dug, and of course it was getting darker, so they decided it was time to go home. So they had some lumber, they had some wood, some planks or something on the buckboard, so they covered the hole, so anybody riding through on horseback, you know, in the dark, wouldn't fall in and break their necks and kill themselves. So they were going to come back the next day and continue. So they came back the next day, they found a spot. It was as if there was no hole had ever been dug, and the wood was just piled over on the side. And they just decided it wasn't the time for them to solve this mystery. And my great-grandfather and the others never went back, to my knowledge.
Well, I'll tell you, Thomas, that is a really interesting story. The explanation that's given by skeptics for Marfa, as I'm sure you probably know, is that these are just misdirected lights, like headlights from the highway.
No.
And also, there were no headlight on cars back in the 1880s, that's for sure.
Right. See, even on Robert Stack, when he went with Unsolved Mysteries, they had technicians with them, and they checked for everything, swamp gas, whatever, and they found nothing. They found nothing.
Can I ask you this? Your tribe, you said Apache. Is it Jicarilla, though? Are you?
Mescalero.
Mescalero. I'd love to talk to you about something else at some point, if you would send me an email.
All right.
Just a strictly off-the-record conversation, you and me.
Sure. And, several years back, I worked with attorneys in Los Angeles. And one day I was in the Roybal building at the cafeteria. And I happened to sit at this round table, and there was other people sitting there. And I took up a conversation with this woman that was sitting there. And it turned out, she was from Texas. And she started, and I asked her if she knew anything about the lights. And she related to me another story that she experienced when she and another woman, they were both federal employees, they were traveling from Houston to Austin, and they were going through the mountains, and one of the women was asleep. Of course, the other one was driving, that was awake, and they had about a quarter of a tank of gas, and the next town was still miles and miles away, and that they had been, and to her, some a light engulfed the vehicle. And the next thing she knows, they're descending from the mountains, and they can see the lights of the city ahead. And she doesn't know where the time went by, because they were several hours away. And they had more gas in the tank than they had at the time when the woman that was driving was worried about if they would make it. So the lights are real. And they've been going on for quite a long time now.
Well, that part of the story sounds very familiar to anybody familiar with alien abduction scenarios. Thomas, I really appreciate the call. Good stories, good insight on the Marfa lights. And I do hope you'll send me a note, because I would like to talk to you about some other topics of mutual interest, I think. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. I'm George Knapp, in for George Norrie. A lot of calls still to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. We got a lot of people on the phones. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we have a hometown caller here, Randy in Las Vegas. Randy, what's on your mind? How you doing?
Hey, I'm an underground journalist. I want to break a medical research blockbuster.
What do you got?
Right here on the air. I just found out there's an island in the Persian Gulf that is an AIDS hospice. Quarantine island, where they take all of their AIDS patients that they want to just put in hospice so that the rest of the world doesn't know about them over there. And a friend of mine who happens to be an advanced medical doctor was called to go to that island and speak, and what led to actually his disclosure that there is an advanced medical cure for AIDS, and he used this hospice island to prove his case and made every single person on the island who was there in quarantine PCR negative. That means that they no longer had any trace of the virus in their body after he was done with them.
So do you know how this was developed? Who developed it and where?
Yeah, I definitely do. His name is Dr. Semir Chachua. He's got an advanced medical technique, which is known as induced remission therapy, that he also uses on cancer patients. He can cure every form of cancer known to mankind with genetic engineering that uses a tagging complex and binds to receptor sites on cancer cells, viruses that cause the immune system to attack the cancer because they can now see it because it's got viruses stuck all over it.
I guess the question would be, how does anyone else verify the parts of your story you're telling us?
Well, some of this information has been covered in a magazine called Nexus Magazine, which has got a lot of controversial information on it. But this was some years ago that some of his material was actually mentioned in there. But I can tell you that they were so excited about the results that he achieved for all these people on this hospice island that somebody over there who is very, very wealthy gave him, as a token of their appreciation, a private island of his own in the Persian Gulf.
Well, I guess my next question is, if the information, at least parts of it, surfaced a couple of years ago, where's the cure? Because the world could sure use that. Is it being stifled, hidden, suppressed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know if you Google search the name Samir Chachua, Dr. Sam Chachua, C-H-A-C-H-O-U-A, you'll actually find some information about him and on him that is out there. And he's made some incredible strides in the area of cancer and AIDS and heart disease. It can actually tag adhesion, scar tissue, and cholesterol for removal by the immune system and leave everything else intact. I've met some of the success stories. I've met at least two of his AIDS patients down in the north of Mexico in the Baja region, where he literally had two AIDS patients come to see him because they were always checking on him after he had done what he did for them. And I got to meet these guys, and I got to see their actually before and after meds, all their paperwork and everything. And these guys looked healthier than anybody I'd ever seen. They were both wasting away on gurneys in the hospitals, waiting to die. One of them had a viral load that was literally in the hundreds of thousands. He was just hours from death when he got his first vaccines from Dr. Sam.
Well, that's very encouraging. I say that with reservations, of course. What is discouraging is that, as I said, you mentioned this had started years ago when the world still doesn't have it. The rest of the world
Let me give you some more on this. Back in 1993, he paid two of the most prestigious medical institutions in the United States, UCLA and Cedars-Sinai, $100,000 to do clinical trials. UCLA, he paid $100,000 to do clinical trials on his cancer vaccine. Cedars-Sinai, he paid $100,000 to do clinical trials on his AIDS vaccine. When Cedars-Sinai found out by their own research methods that he had 24 vaccines that were capable of neutralizing HIV in vitro 99% of the time or better, they shut down the study. They confiscated all the materials. They tried to disassociate themselves from him and say he wasn't even a medical doctor and that it was their technology he was trying to steal from them. It actually exploded in a court case because he brought Cedars-Sinai to court in Los Angeles, to federal court, and it only took a jury 2 days to decide unanimously in the doctor's favor. And then some commissioner stepped in and lowered the $10 million award that he was to receive to $10,000 as the final insult. This information was covered on MSNBC. If you look up on Google video or YouTube, you can find that news story that was actually broadcast on MSNBC covering this controversy.
Well, we're very interested, Randy. I'll ask you one more question. What are you doing with it? You said you're going to break the story yourself. Are you writing for a particular publication or just going to write something and see where it goes?
I'm going to put something together, and I'm putting it on the internet under my own name, and I have no fear of retribution over this because I can absolutely prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that everything I'm saying is absolutely true.
Randy, send me a copy, okay?
I'd be glad to. I'd love to get in touch with you. I'm local in Las Vegas, and I've been trying to get a hold of you for a long time. I actually met you years and years ago at a high school gymnasium when you were giving a UFO briefing. I don't know if you remember what back that far, but it was over 10 years ago.
Well, I've done one or two of those, so I'm not quite sure. But you, I'm not hard to find. Call the station, leave a number, and I'll get back to you, okay? Thanks for the call.
You need, Channel 8?
Yeah, Channel 8, KLAS-TV.
Okay, I'll be sure and do that. Randy Williams, right. Thanks a lot.
All right, Randy Williams, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Andy in Los Angeles. Good morning, Andy.
Yeah, good morning, sir. I really enjoy your interviews. You do an outstanding job.
Thanks.
Two things real quickly, not to take a lot of time. When I was about 22 to 23, just back out of the Army from Vietnam, I'm 63 right now, so a lot of years back, my uncle had passed away. He was guardian of my grandmother and maintained all her properties. And anyway, one day he suddenly died. He got pneumonia. He was about 57, 58 at the time. And I would take my volunteer one day a week to take my grandma to church, which meant I had to stay overnight with her. And one day I'm laying in bed about approximately a couple months after he passed away. And I'm laying in his bed. And he was like a father to me and my brother. He used to take us out. My father never had time for us. So I had a deep emotional connection to him. And what happened was I'm laying in his bed. My grandmother's in the next room, maybe about 100 feet away. And I said, you know, a little prayer. I said, Uncle, I sure hope you're with God in heaven right now, because he was a good man. I said, I miss you dearly. And I would have I'd do anything to see you again, to have you back again. I closed my eyes. There's no lights in the room. Within approximately 2 to 5 seconds later, I hear the sound of it was either keys like this, or it was the sound of chimes. I'm not sure. All of a sudden, the room lit up like the brightest sun you could possibly imagine. And I said, oh, my God. I said, this can't be, you know. I put the cover over my head. I'm terrified, absolutely terrified, like a portal or a new dimension opened up before me. And when I got my eyes closed and the light is piercing through my eyelids like there's no barrier there. And then from the light, and then, make a long story short, I open up my eyes again, pull down the cover, and a piece of paper floats in the air. When I saw that piece of paper floating in the air real slowly, I said, I know this is not my imagination. I'm not dreaming. I jumped out of bed, yelled, I screamed, terrified, went to the next room, turned on the light, and my grandmother comes hobbling in with a cane. She says, what's wrong? What's wrong? I said, Grandma, I just had a bad dream. She said, well, leave the light on in your bedroom and don't turn it off. Okay, so I go back in the room. There's a piece of paper, and it had doodling on it. My uncle used to carry keys all the time. He had nervous energy. And second thing, he was always doodling on paper. Showed it to some of my aunts and uncles who are all deceased now, of course. And they said, that looks like your uncle's handwriting, like he was scribbling and trying to get through it to me. The second thing is, approximately 9 years ago, downtown Los Angeles, I'm sitting in my car. It's just before the break of dawn. I see a light in the sky going backwards. Imagine like a helicopter floating in the air, but at a low altitude, very low, and it's going backwards. Then it stops in midair, and it starts coming forward, and it's like pulsing, a pulsing light. You could not make out the figure of anything except the light was turning, like back and forth, like looking, searching. And the next thing I know, the light suddenly goes out, suddenly, and the whole sky lights up with a ring, a circular ring, and slowly, slowly dissipates over a 20-minute period. I asked the rocket scientist about that, and he said that was electromagnetic energy. I saw it for myself, and I'm not making that up. So I hope that might help some of your listeners.
Well, I appreciate it. And I can tell from your voice that you're not making it up, and you're telling us the truth as you know it. You know, we cover this kind of stuff on Coast to Coast every night. The other host more than me, but you know, it tells us that the world is a far more wondrous and mysterious place than we can imagine. That the universe is bigger and more mysterious than we can ever imagine. That the laws of physics as we know it may not be the end all and be all. That there are other laws that perhaps we don't understand. when it comes to things like UFOs and other dimensions and ghosts and life after death, things of that sort, there's so many stories. What bothers me about it, I guess, is that so many stories told by regular people, honest people who are honestly relating things that happened to them, things that we would characterize as paranormal, and yet science won't pay any attention to it. They dismiss it out of hand. It can't be, therefore it isn't, and they won't investigate it. And that's why there is such a chasm, I think, a widening chasm between regular people and scientists, why we don't believe them on other things. You know, I think your stories are very compelling and interesting. I wish I could explain them, what it was that happened to you. I wish I could have similar experiences, the kinds of experiences that our callers tell us about all the time, but that's not the case. Andy in Los Angeles, thanks for the call. Appreciate the stories. Cindy in Huntsville, Alabama. Good morning, Cindy.
George, hey, listen, I just wanted to applaud and commend you guys on the wonderful job you're doing, and I know it's got to be a terrifically hard job. And one of the job requirements I think you missed is the patience you guys have with all the callers, and you show every single caller respect. You know, no matter what they're talking about, whether you agree with it or not, you show them all the same patience and respect. And I just wanted to give kudos to you, George, Ian, and Art years ago. That's it.
Well, thanks, Cindy. You know, it is a necessity with the job, is because it's such a unique program, as George Norrie often talks about it. It's a unique bind between the hosts and the audience. I mean, the audience, the listeners, the coast-to-coast faithful make the show what it is. It's a participatory democracy in a sense, and it would not be the show that it is just with interviewees and interviewers. It's that audience participation, direct participation, that makes what it is. Thanks very much for the call. I think we get one more in before the break, maybe before the end of the show, maybe more than that. David on our international line calling from Toronto, Canada. Good morning, David.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay.
You know what? I just wanted to touch upon the ayahuasca plant, and I wanted to extend that to a plant called Ibogaine.
Sure.
Have you heard of that?
Nope, I don't know that one.
Yeah. I was wondering if it might be possible to do a show on physical dependence on, various drugs, whether it be heroin or cocaine or what have you. And I know in the United States, that those drugs are classified, I guess it's Schedule 1.
Right.
In Canada, I know they're legal, sort of in that gray area.
They're legal, distributed by a pharmacy or street legal or what?
You know, it's just one of those things that my understanding is that it's just, you know, there are cafes or you know, that sort of thing. But they're not cheap though. But my point is this, is it seems that, you know, there's plenty of literature out of, for instance, the University of Miami, Dr. Deborah Mash, that suggests that it really does, turn back the clock on the addictive, process, sort of, you know, take it back to the beginning. You know, it'd be very interesting to get perhaps an advocate of that type of, use of that medication, and somebody that, you know, may have a problem with it or see some deleterious effects.
Well, I think that's a good idea. I know we have touched on some topics in that regard. Marijuana, for example, we've had interviews with people that just think it should be decriminalized. As a investigative reporter, I deal with law enforcement quite a bit. I respect greatly the cops on the beat that fight against drug cartels and some of these big bad gangsters who bring that stuff into the country, various substances. But I'll tell you, as a person, I don't think people should be going to jail for it. I don't think it should be a criminal matter. It's a medical matter, a health matter. There's a great deal of evidence to suggest that handling it as a health matter as opposed to a law enforcement matter is a much more productive approach, both from a health and societal standpoint. So I don't know why it would not also apply to the drugs, the substances you're talking about. I'm familiar with ayahuasca somewhat. I don't know the other substance you're talking about, but I'll suggest it to the producers as a possible topic for a future show. Thanks for the call, David. East of the Rockies, Dick in Wisconsin. Good morning, Dick.
Hey, how are you doing?
Okay, we got about 2 minutes, so you got to get to this one quickly.
Oh, boy. I didn't find it like Wisconsin. I just I saw like a series of like three lights floating above a lake near our town that just like shot right off to the left.
When was this? And was anybody else with you?
No. It was me and one friend. We were driving and we saw it. I was just wondering if you, if you thought that was like possibly an extraterrestrial type thing or some sort of a military something that we don't know about.
Well, tell me a little bit more. You're saying that these were three or five lights that were they hovering over over the lake and just shot up into the sky?
No, there was like one. Like larger light in the middle and then two smaller lights on either side, and it just shot off to the west.
Well, I'll tell you, not having seen it. Yeah.
Yes, I'm not faster than anything I've ever seen before.
Not having seen it and not having video of it and not seeing any drawings or anything, it'd be pretty tough for me to give you an opinion about what it was. I'll just tell you this, that in general, in the UFO field, about 95% of what's reported as a UFO is a misidentification of something explainable. But that doesn't mean that what you saw was explainable. I'd love to hear more. Maybe you need to write down an account and send it to us. Thank you, Dick, for the call. Thank you, all our callers, as well as to James Martinez, our cold fusion proponent. And a special thanks to Dan and Sean and Tom there at Premier. Ian Punnett is here Saturday night. I'm back Sunday, and then George Norrie back in the big chair on Monday. I hope you'll tune in for all those. Good night, everyone.